This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. The history of modern viticulture. Long before Bordeaux ever made wine, before humans split from chimpanzees, the world's grapevines divided in two. Some 10 to 20 million years ago, the continents drifted apart and American vines evolved separately from Europeans' Vitis vinifera vines. Cut off for millions of years, they faced very different challenges. New insects, fungi, and molds. Over time, the American species developed thick, bitter skins and tough, resistant roots, natural armor against the pests like phylloxera and mildew. Meanwhile, European vines sheltered from those threats became delicate, refined, perfect for wine, but defenseless. In the mid-1800s, the two families met again, and the reunion changed everything. Nowhere would the coming storm hit harder than Bordeaux, the beating heart of Europe's fine wine trade. In the early 1800s, its vineyards stretched unbroken from the Medoc to Saint-Emilion, producing the most sought-after wines in the world. But Bordeaux was only the beginning. The same trade routes that carried bottles to London and New York also carried cuttings, plants, and soils, and with them the invisible passengers of North America. Over the next 50 years, tiny spores, microscopic insects, would devastate Europe's vines from Portugal to Hungary. And yet it was in Bordeaux, with a wealth, reputation, and growing scientific curiosity, that the fight back would begin. This is a story about how pestilence and disease brought havoc to European vineyards in the 19th century, and how and beyond that gave the destructive birth to modern viticulture and reshaped Bordeaux. If you walk through Bordeaux vineyards in the early 1800s, you would barely recognize them. The vines grew low and bushy, trained in the old goblet style. No wires, no trellising, just knotted, self-supporting plants. Rows were irregular and horses ploughed the gaps in between. The grape mix was very different. The dominant reds were Malbec and Cabernet Franc, with a fair bit of Carmenere, Petit Verdot, and a little bit of modest plantings of the new variety, Cabernet Sauvignon. On the right bank, Merlot was used mainly to soften the dominant Cabernet Franc, not leading the blend. And yet Bordeaux was booming. The wines of Lafite, Latour, Margaux, Haute-Brionne were exported to London, St. Petersburg, and New York. Then, in 1855, Napoleon III asked for the classification of the region's best estates, and Bordeaux proudly declared itself capital of the fine wine. But just as those famous chateaus were being ranked, a silent invader was creeping across the channel. The first attack, the White Plague. In 1845, the first great vineyard plague struck. English gardeners reported a strange white dust began coating the leaves and fruit. The fungi Odium tuckeri, or powdery mildew, had been discovered. It had crossed the Atlantic from North America, likely on imported vines or ornamental plants. And within years, it swept through all of Europe. By the early 1850s, the entire region of Bordeaux was covered in what growers called La Blanc, the White Plague. It attacked leaves, fruit, even stems, smothering photosynthesis and shriveling grapes before they ripened. Records from Chateau Margaux and Lafite show disastrous harvests, yields down by a half or more. At first, growers blamed the weather, bad pruning, even vine exhaustion. But a few scientists, including the French botanist Camille Montanet, recognized it as a fungus spread by spores. Unfortunately, there were no fungicides. Growers tried washing the vines with vinegar, lime water, salt, even soap, with little success. Then a few observant farmers began to notice something curious. Where vines were near sulfur mines or sulfur fumes from nearby industries drifted over vineyards, the mildew damage seemed much lighter. It was Henri Marais, a young viticulturist from Montpellier, who took those lucky coincidences and turned them into science. He experimented with powdered sulfur, the same mineral those mines produced, and proved it could stop the fungus cold. In 1852, sulfur dustings was saving vineyards from Bordeaux to Burgundy. What began as a farmer's hunch became the first triumph of modern vineyard chemistry. But mildew also began reshaping Bordeaux's vineyards in subtler ways. Varieties with tight bunches and thin skins like Malbec and Carmenere suffered terribly. Cabernet Sauvignon with its small, thick-skinned berries proved far more resistant, and Merlot, earlier ripening and better suited to cooler soils, escaped much of the damage. Without even realizing it, mildew had begun nudging Bordeaux's blend towards the varieties that would one day define it. But growers only had a few years after 1852 when something far worse hit them, the unseen killer. In the 1860s, near the Rhone Valley, growers noticed vines mysteriously withering. Mysterious patches of vines in the Rhone and then Bordeaux were turning yellow and dying. The leaves curled, the shoots shriveled, and within 3 years, whole vineyards were dead. In 1868, Jules-Emile Planchon, a botany professor at the University of Montpellier, one of France's leading scientists, started working on the problem. He was asked to investigate the vine disease devastating vineyards near the town of Puget in the Gard region. With his hand lens, he examined roots and found tiny yellow lice clustered around swellings, the first scientific observation of phylloxera insect. He named the pest Phylloxera vasturix, meaning the devastating leaf dweller, though it mainly attacks the roots. Planchon described them in his notes as insects smaller than dust, yet capable of killing the largest vine. It seemed unstoppable. Chemical drenches, flooding, even burying toads under vines. Nothing worked. When Planchon looked at American vines, Vitis lambrusca, Vitis ripara, and Vitis rubestris, grown in France, he saw the same insects feeding on the roots. But the American vines were healthy. They had evolved with the pest and were naturally resistant. This suggested two things. Phylloxera came from North America, probably imported in cuttings in the 1850s, and American root were resistant, while European Vitis vinifera were defenseless. But that theory met fierce resistance from French growers, who couldn't believe salvation lay in the same country that caused the problem. Riley was a state entomologist of Missouri, a brilliant British-born scientist who had studied grape pests in the US. American vineyards had long coexisted with phylloxera. The insect was known locally as root lice. Riley had already been experimenting with American vine species and their resistance. In 1871, Riley and Planchon corresponded, comparing samples and field notes. Riley confirmed that the French phylloxera and the American root louse were the same species, clinching the transatlantic link. Through their correspondence and joint fieldwork, Planchon and Riley proposed a radical solution. Graft European vines onto American rootstocks. That way, resistant roots could survive phylloxera attacks, while the American scion, the bit above ground, still produced traditional grape varieties and the quality wine. It was a revolutionary idea, but also terrifying for French growers. Grafting meant uprooting every vineyard, losing years of production, and learning a completely new horticultural skill. Many resisted. Some tried flooding their fields. Others planted vines in the sand where phylloxera can't live. A few tried chemical soil drenches like carbon disulfide, dangerous and expensive. But none of these worked at scale. In the 1870s, the grafting experiments in Montpellier and Bordeaux proved successful. American rootstocks saved European viticulture. Riley sent cuttings to Montpellier. Planchon's team grafted European varieties, Cabernet, Merlot, all the classics, onto American roots. The grafted vines lived, the disease was stopped. The solution had come from the very place the pest was born. It was brilliant, but brutal. Every vineyard had to be replanted. By the 1900s, almost all of Bordeaux stood on American rootstocks, a massive, painful rescue that saved European wine itself. Between 1870 and 1890s, Bordeaux went through the greatest reconstruction in its history. Vines were dug up, fields replanted, and entire hillsides redesigned. This was the moment Bordeaux had to choose which varieties to keep. Malbec, though beloved, didn't graft well, and its thin skins made it prone to rot. Carmenere ripened too late and too inconsistently. But Cabernet Sauvignon took beautifully to the new rootstocks, keeping its power and structure, and Merlot, grafted onto vigorous rootstocks, thrived in heavy clays where Cabernet Sauvignon struggled. By the end of the century, the shape of Bordeaux's modern red blend had emerged, half science, half survival. Replanting also changed how vines were trained. Before phylloxera, vines were low bushes which trapped humidity, perfect conditions for mildew. But as growers sprayed sulfur and later copper, they needed vines lifted from the ground for airflow and access. Enter Dr. Jules Goyot, a doctor and scientist who had been studying vineyard systems across France. In the 1950s, he proposed a new method to train vines on a wire, with one or two fruiting canes bent horizontally and a renewal spur for the next year, the Goyot system. At first, it spread slowly. Iron wire was expensive, and few growers could afford it to stake thousands of vines. But by the 1880s, industrial steel wire had become cheap and widely available, thanks to new European smelters and rail production. Suddenly, Goyot's system was practical. It offered everything Bordeaux needed: better airflow against mildew, easier spraying, and a structure suited to horses and later machinery. By the turn of the century, the once bushy vineyards of Bordeaux had been transformed into neat, wired rows that looked like they do now today. Just as phylloxera damage eased, another pest arrived. In 1878, a new disease hit Bordeaux called downy mildew. It spotted the leaves with yellow patches and turned them brown and fuzzy beneath. Defoliation meant no ripening, no harvest, no income. At this point, growers must have felt cursed. But salvation once again from science and from Bordeaux itself. Professor Pierre-Marie-Alex Miadet, working with Chateau Dussac and Margaux, noticed that vines by the roadside, coated in a blue, chalky mix to deter grape thieves, was perfectly healthy. He analyzed the mixture, copper sulfate and lime. When combined with water, it created a light bluish wash that stuck to the leaves and killed the fungi. Miadet refined the recipe, and by 1895, the Bordeaux mixture was born, the world's first fungicide. The lime neutralized the copper's acidity, making it safe for vines, while the pale blue color showed where it had washed off. It was simple, cheap, and effective, and it saved Bordeaux yet again. By the 1880s, there was one final twist in the saga, black rot, another North American fungi that shriveled grapes into mummies. Luckily, Bordeaux mixture worked against that too. And then there was botrytis, the native European grey rot. In most years, it was ruinous, but in Sauternes, under the careful eye of Chateau Yquem, it turned magical, becoming noble rot, responsible for some of the world's greatest sweet wines. After 50 years of crisis, Bordeaux had fought off five major plagues: powdery mildew, phylloxera, downy mildew, black rot, and botrytis, and in the process reinvented how it farmed, planted, and blended wines. By 1900, Bordeaux was unrecognizable from the vineyards in the 1830s. Every vine stood on American rootstock. Every row was trellised, trained with Goyot wires. Spraying sulfur and Bordeaux mixture had become routine. And most importantly, the grape composition had changed. Cabernet Sauvignon now reigned on the left bank, powerful, structure, and able to thrive in the gravel soils. Merlot, once a minor player, dominated the right bank, loved for its early ripening and velvety texture. Cabernet Franc remained elegant and the bridge between the two of them. The wines were deeper, longer-lived, and far more consistent than before. In fact, the Bordeaux blend, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Cabernet Franc, wasn't born from style or marketing, but from survival. These were the grapes that made it through the century's worst disasters. By the dawn of the 20th century, Bordeaux had done more than survive. It had reinvented viticulture of the modern world. The crisis of the 1800s gave birth to rootstock grafting, chemical and biological wine protection, scientific trellising and pruning, and a new grape hierarchy led by Cabernet Sauvignon and Bordeaux. And that's the Bordeaux we know today. The wines are structured, yet forged in hardship. So the next time you taste your Pouillac or Pomerol, think about the centuries of struggle behind it. The mildew that forced the first sprays, the aphid that rebuilt the vineyards, and the chemistry and courage that turned disaster into progress. Bordeaux didn't just survive the 19th century, it evolved through it, and in doing so taught the world how to save its vines. That ends the history of looking at diseases and how modern vineyards and viticulture was born.